show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here. April is done. May has begun. It is the first day of May 2014. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. We call what we do here conversation radio. We also call what we do here dealing with pollen, which suddenly seems to have just landed like something from outer space. Sorry for the delays, but I figured you didn't want me sneezing at you. Who knows? Go figure. No, headonradionetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find news stories of the day. That's where you'll find access to the chat room. And it's also where you will find, of course, the PayPal. Now, we closed out last night's... mean throw the third switch, Randy? The third switch is thrown. Screaming like a son of a gun. Now I gotta check the chat room and see if we actually are streaming. We'll find out just in a moment. But anyway, headonradionetwork.com is also home to the chat room, where you are welcome to pop on by. And yes, we are streaming. So thank you very much, loud and clear, via Will from Chicago, Tim from L.A. Yes, you are streaming. So thank you. I had a paranoid moment there. I've been more than a little paranoid lately, given the trouble we've had getting a stream out to the White Rose servers. But we're getting there. Anyway, thank you, Chris. He says sounds good. It's coming in loud and clear. Hope so. And I hope we don't have the streaming issues we did last night. No, wander on by the headonradionetwork.com chat room and join in the conversation, because it is a merry place to hang out and turn this whole thing into a multimedia extravaganza. A hornapalooza. There's a fun word. Now, this is, of course, Thorn in the Side Thursday. I was mentioning a moment ago, thanks to Randy, we got in under the wire and finished off the fundraising challenge last night. And so we begin March with no deficit, which is magnificent. March, May. I told you, it's pollen. We begin May, at the zero line instead of, you know, some negative number, so thank you very much. And we also begin May with a challenge. It has become traditional for the month to begin with Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge, and it's out there and it's on the table. Shirley in Wisconsin offering to match the first $150 that come in. So your 5 becomes 10, your 10, 20, your 20, 40, your 40, 80. You know, your 75 could become 150. Your 150 would become 300. So many, many thanks to Shirley in Wisconsin, where I'm told things are beginning to thaw out, hopefully. Many thanks indeed. And hopefully that'll get us well on the way toward, staying out of holes in the month of May. It is, of course, May Day. The first day of May being a day recognized around the world as in recognition of the rights of working people. Also being a day in recognition of the rights, R-I-T-E-S, of spring. Beltane? Anyone? Yeah. Let's see. What else is it? It is the founding date of my college fraternity, when six young men got together at a little liberal arts college. You know, they were scholars of Greek and Latin, young scholars. Some had been sent north from the south to be educated, some from the growing Midwest. It was May the 1st, 1848, in a little log cabin in Canonsburg, Pennsylvania, when those six young scholars got together to form a mutual aid and sort of literary debating society. Things like that were all the rage in the mid-19th century, when a new interest in democracy was springing up, and college campuses were not immune. And bless their hearts, these six young men formed a group that they called Phi Gamma Delta. And it was an academic society. It was not what, I mean, and it later grew into the American so-called Greek system, but it was originally an academic society for discussing the crucial and critical issues of the day. These particular six young men were at where? Jefferson College in Canonsburg, Pennsylvania. Years later, it would merge with Washington College up the road a little ways in Washington, PA, and become Washington and Jefferson. And bless them, the Alpha chapter of Phi Gamma Delta exists there to this day. You know, the fraternity system went a little wrong. It stopped being a literary society, liberal arts society, and rapidly devolved into some of the horror stories one reads from time to time, and that has to do with getting away from its academic roots. If you could have taken those six young men in Canonsburg, PA, and shown them, for instance, a photograph of, say, 150 kegs of beer being readied for a block party on a university campus somewhere, they'd look at each other and say, "What? I beg your pardon? Huh?" So there's that. May the 1st is also, in this particular incident, May the 1st is the 21st wedding anniversary of Agnes and me. Yep, 21 years. As of right now, we had been married for probably 5 hours or so. It was a joyous day, a merry day. I don't know if I've told this story before or not. I don't think Agnes minds. It's, you know, it's one of those things that becomes family lore after a while. She was radiant. She still is. And I was smitten and stricken and just generally bowled over. She was redheaded kryptonite to me. And we decided not to do it in a church, but to do it outside, and we had a beautiful, beautiful day for it on a hilltop in West Virginia. And she wore a wreath of flowers in her hair. I was in a black double-breasted tuxedo. All of my groomsmen And see, this is where I kind of want to make clear that when I talk about the stupidity of firearms, I know what I'm talking about. We were all packing heat because my beloved intended had been repeatedly threatened by a former spouse. And so the time came that the vows were exchanged. And I got through my part of it. And then the minister of the gospel, yes, he was in attendance. Just don't have a heck of a lot of Buddhist monks to do wedding ceremonies in rural West Virginia these days, or then. Looked at her and said, "Do you take this man?" At which point, my intended, in a beautiful white gown with the off the shoulder and some little tiny spaghetti straps and just as pretty as could be, screamed, "Oh no!" And my groomsmen, all packing heat, and I immediately formed a circle around her, ready to shoot anything down that came up the, you know, whatever. And she commenced to doing something like, maybe it was some sort of pagan celebratory springtime dance. There was this jump, snort, shake, fly, shimmy. And we did rapidly figure out that, no, she was not under threat. She was instead dealing with a bee that had decided to wander down her dress, and she is very much allergic to bee stings. So we got that calmed down, and nobody drew weapons or anything. But we found out later, by admission, that was a wedding that almost became a real horror. Because the said former spouse had kept the crosshairs of a rifle variously on her head and on my head during the entirety of the proceedings, limited primarily by indecision as to whom he should kill first and whether he could get us both, whether he hated me more or hated she. So that's what May 1st means to me. And you know what? All the firearms in the world could not have stopped him had he decided to start squeezing off rounds. We later changed into our reception gear, both overalls and nice country-ish shirts. It was May the 1st and still a little bit cool. Lovely day, though. And played impromptu golf around an invented golf course on the ridges of that farm. A dear friend and I had smoked up something like 30 chickens and maybe 10 pork shoulders, something like that, for the attending party. And had just a raucous, wonderful, good time. So that's my May 1st story. That's my May Day story. Ron and Raleigh noting, I had my maypole up. However, I couldn't find any Morris dancers to participate. Another tradition down the drain. Yeah, now these things happen. But here at 14 minutes past the hour, I'll note that this is, of course, Thorn in the Side Thursday. That May Day 21 years ago was a Saturday. This May 1st falls on a Thursday, when here at the Horn we, if not celebrate, take note of the right-wingery that just makes us want to variously scream, carry on, kick furniture, chew through tennis balls, that sort of thing. Where to start with that? I know where I... Well, first of all, a public service message. This came in from our inveterate veteran chat room moderator, Lottie, who is brilliant in many things and has helped me out of more than a couple of computer jams here, because he understands things that, well, many of us don't. Lottie sent along a link to an alert regarding computer security scams. And I sincerely hope everyone will take this. You know, many of you are astute in the ways of the computer. I know a little bit about hardware, don't know a hell of a lot about software. But this is a warning against tech support scams. And I was even on the receiving end of one of these via the telephone at the AIC headquarters this past time we were in D.C. And there it was. I mean, this is exactly what it was. You have a phone call claiming to be from Microsoft or someone claiming to work on their behalf telling you that you have a virus on your computer or some errors which they will help you fix via AMMYY admin. It is definitely a scam. Usually these calls, well, at least the one I got, sounded like it was coming out of India. And Bob continues. He said, I just received a call from a person that claimed to work for www.techsupport.com. And that he was calling me because my system was infected with a Trojan. When I told him that I would not give him remote access to my computer so he could repair it, he told me that he was under contract with Microsoft and that my computer was reporting to them that it needed servicing. At this point, bells went off, Lottie says. Microsoft will never call customer care, period. You have to call them, and usually it's a hassle to get them to do anything. That's why they're Microsoft. And quite often, you have to pay them to do anything. Lottie continues, the person calling me then asked me to find a specific file named csrss.exe. I found it in the System32 directory. The file csrss.exe is a vital Windows file. Here are the specifics. This is the user mode portion of the Win32 subsystem. Win32.sys is the kernel mode portion. CSRSS stands for Client Server Runtime Subsystem and is an essential subsystem that must be running at all times. CSRSS is responsible for console windows, creating and or deleting threads, and implementing some portions of the 16th. Note, the CSRSS.exe file is located in the folder C:\Windows\System32. In other cases, CSRSS.exe is a virus, spyware, Trojan, or worm. Check this with Security Task Manager, virus with the same file name, NIMDA.E. And Lottie continues, yes, it can be spoofed and used by hackers. That's why I scanned the file with my antivirus software. It came back negative. When I told the caller that the file was legitimate, he quickly ended the phone call, no goodbye. I then called Microsoft Customer Service, who then connected me with tech support. They took down all the information and will be putting out an information release about this. Too bad I could not get the caller's phone number. He was smart enough to use call intercepting, which only reports a number associated with the phone company. Microsoft tech support also confirmed my statement above about Microsoft never calling customers to repair their systems. So be aware, be alert. And I'm not so much worried about you guys because you're all pretty savvy. But if you hear of a friend or somebody says, hey, I got a call from, be prepared to tell them to stay away or warn them against it in advance. I was talking to Agnes yesterday, and she got a call from someone claiming to be the U.S. Treasury Department who had randomly selected her to receive an $8,400 grant. And there was a whole patter about what will you do with the money, and then it was, will you give us your credit card number, please? Jesus. And that telephone spoofing part that Lottie was, I mentioned this because that telephone number spoofing part, the number these folks were using went back to a lobbying organization that does business as Verizon Wireless. Let's see. Subject line, May Day, the ballad of Agnes and Bob's wedding ceremony. This from Michael in Madison. I don't mean to trivialize your May Day story in any way whatsoever, and I have heard the story before, but it just struck me that May Day, the ballad of Agnes and Bob's wedding ceremony, might just be the greatest drive-by trucker song never written. I've been listening to them a lot lately, so I might be guilty of filtering too much of the world through their lens, but I don't know. I think that could really be something. Oh, God. It probably could. I'm a little too close to it. I don't know if I could. We were all excited. We were also terrified. I think I was medicated at the time. I know she was. I know I was. I think she was. I had it back. And it was beautiful, and the day was lovely, and then all that. Oh, no. Wow. So, anybody want to take a shot at it? You're welcome to, and thanks to Michael for the idea. Let's see. Chat rooms filling up this evening. Good evening to Devin and to Dwayne. Lottie's, of course, there. Sentient Being is there. Sparky, of course, is there. Stockton Larry. And Tim from L.A. is in the room this evening. And good evening also to Will from Chicago. Jump on by. It's a real good time. And Buffer. Oh, God. Knockwood. Buffering issues. There seems to have been one right at the beginning of the program, and nothing thus far. God only knows why. So let's jump into tonight's Thorn in the Side Thursday content. We're going to have to go out to Idaho, Stan, for this one. Or maybe Talibandaho. We've already got Talibandiana. I think that this has potential, too. Sherman Alexie has a book, a young adult novel, and it is called The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian. It is, for reasons that have more to do with the prurient mindsets of conservative and fundamentalist and evangelical Americans, one of the most banned books in the United States. Sherman Alexie is a Native American. And in the Meridian School District of Talibandaho, Idaho Stan, it had been on, this novel, the Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian, had been on the 10th grade reading list, as well as some other reading lists. Among other things, the Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian has been a winner of the National Book Award. Part of the reason that it won a National Book Award is because it does what we like for literature to do. It examines reality. It mirrors real experiences. It provokes thought while at the same time entertaining. Well, 2 weeks ago, the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing parents of the Meridian, Idaho School District launched a campaign to remove the absolutely true diary of a part-time Indian from the aforementioned reading list. Because Dan, yeah, really. It's a story about a. The book is a story about a young man named Junior, who had been going to school on the Indian reservation, and he transfers to an all-white high school. And apparently, the book, according to the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians, the evangelicals, they objected because they said the book's got filthy words in it that we do not speak in our home. Words like Indian. No. There's even a reference to masturbation, and it contains profanity and has been viewed by many as anti-Christian. Because, you know, all books in school libraries have to be Christian. That's because America is a Christian nation. Somebody cue up Lee Greenwood. It's filthy words. Filthy, filthy, filthy words. So in this campaign, these godforsaken dunderhead Christians got this book pulled from circulation and removed from the reading list. Now, the students, on the other hand, wanted to continue having access to this challenging piece of well-written literature. One petition with 350 signatures was submitted to the Board of Education asking them to keep the book on the reading list. Ah, never mind the kids. What do they know? They're destroying society with their low-riding pants and hip-hop ways anyhow, aren't they? I remember back when young people were respectful and knew how to do the minuet and tie a nice bow tie. Well, okay, so the dim-witted parents managed to get the book removed from the reading list. Anti-Christian content. So in response, two women named Sarah Baker and Jennifer Lott started a crowdfunding campaign. And the crowdfunding campaign's purpose was to raise $3,400 to purchase copies of The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian and give a copy to each of the 350 students who had signed the petition. Okay. Good. That's noble. So apparently $3,400 that was enough money to buy more than 350 copies of the book. So Wednesday evening, a week ago, a junior Mountain High School student by the name of Brady Kissel went to Kleiner Park in Meridian, Idaho, Stan, to do a book giveaway. Brady Kissel was going to give away the books that were provided for them to give away for free. I don't know if our pal Rochelle the librarian is listening, but she's probably A, already aware of this story, and B, more than aware of the urges towards censorship that infect the right wing like a tertiary level case of the clap. The Wednesday evening book giveaway was hosted by Rediscovered Books in Boise, and it was part of a worldwide event called World Book Night. The purpose of World Book Night being to put a book in the hands of a person who is not prone to doing a lot of reading. Therefore, the book has to be really readable. Brady Kissel and her fellow students and friends were quite successful in the book giveaway. They gave away all but 20 copies. This is where it gets fun. If you ever wondered about that little, that maybe not so little, that creepy, absolutely creepy fascism streak that runs through this country, here it is. Because the book was being given away, one of those God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding, fine Christian parents picked up the phone and dropped the dime on Brady Kissel and her nefarious literary fifth columnists. Really, the upstanding Christian parent called the cops to go and try to suppress that book giveaway in the name of Jesus. Right, and the police went and they showed up and they said, "Hi, what are you doing?" And the kids said, "Giving away free books? Really? Yeah, that's what we're doing. Yeah, good for you." The kid said, "Why are you here?" And they said, "We really don't know. Somebody wanted us to come down here and arrest you for giving away free books." "Gonna? No. Bye now. Bye. Hey, you want a book?" Really? The cops were told that the parent was concerned that teenagers would be picking up a copy of the book without having a parent's permission. Really? So guess what? Having heard about the story, the publisher, Hatchett Book Group, that's Sherman Alexie's publisher, well, they turned around and said, "Hey, you want another 350 copies to give away?" And provided another 350 copies of the absolutely true story of a part-time Indian for young people in Meridian to read, so that maybe their fundamentalist evangelical parents' heads might explode. Now, want to hear about that that anti-Christian filthy language? This is from the text. "You should approach each book. You should approach life with the real possibility that you might get a metaphorical boner at any point." "A metaphorical boner?" I shouted. "What the heck is a metaphorical boner?" Gordy laughed. "When I say boner, I really mean joy," he said. Boner is funnier and more joyful. In Well Pinnett, I was a freak because I loved books. In Reardon, I was a joyous freak. We do not want any of our young people reading that filthy word boner that we do not use in our home. We say stiffy. God almighty. Boner. The Lord God gave us the English language, and we will refer to it as erection if we refer to it as anything at all, which we do not refer to it at all, as it is part of the sinful nature of humankind and one of the reasons that we got our ass bounced out of the Garden of Eden in the first place. Dirty sex, filthy sex talk is going to be the death of this here country, and we don't need any of it in Meridian, Idaho, Stan. God bless America. I wish I was kidding. I wish that was not a real story from Merca. But you know what? It is. Good question from Stockton Larry. Couldn't they have just put the books in Marriott hotel rooms right next to the Book of Morans? Yeah. What was it Bill Hicks said one time? I'm gonna check into a hotel one night and say, hey, I don't have a Gideon Bible in my bedside table drawer. Get one of those Gideons up here right away. Oh, brother. Meanwhile, in Levy County, Florida, I love this. In Levy County, Florida, the county commission has once again refused an attempt by an atheist, or not an attempt, but a request by an atheist group to place a monument containing words from the framers and founders of this country next to their God-fearing, Bible-believing, poor translation of the Ten Commandments. Why? Because the county commission says that it does not contain the entire text of what was said. Never mind that the Ten Commandments are only a part of the book of Exodus, which is a part of what we understand to be the Old Testament, which is in turn a part of what we understand to be the Bible, which is a part in turn of what we understand to be the world's scriptural literature. So guess what? The atheists are going to sue. The goobers from the county commission of Levy County are going to lose. They will spend thousands of dollars in the process. And they will wind up having to pay the attorney's fees of the atheists. Because they're stupid! Stupid, 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 stupid followers of Christ. What are you going to do? Yeah, you're absolutely right, Devin, with regard to Idaho. Thought-provoking? Can't have any of that shit. Ain't going to be provoking no thoughts among the dear little children of Meridian, Idaho. Devin noting, you know, if I was rich, I'd send them Das Kapital and Slaughterhouse 5, just for good measure. Yeah, and you might as well send them a stereo to play that Slim Whitman yodeling song so that the Idaho parents' heads could explode with the proper soundtrack, just like from when Mars Attacks. Or Mars Attacks, or whatever it was. Yeah, that's the kind of day it's gonna be. We got all kinds of right-wing thorns in the side. We have an absolute... Well, we are thorn in the side poor. Mercy sakes. Let's, in point of fact, let's wander off to Wisconsin. Yeah. Let's talk about a right-wing pig-licking in Wisconsin by the name of Glenn Grothman. Okay, Devin, that's true. The parents in Meridian, Idaho will need glass fishbowl helmets first. Maybe the rich person who provides the books can provide those too, and the stereo and the recording from Slim Whitman. And well, then you've just got all your bases covered, don't you? Yeah, Glenn Grothman makes some other Repiglicans look positively sane. He is presently running to defeat in the Wisconsin primary a Republican member of Congress by the name of Tom Petrie. Tom Petrie's buddies just all call him Dish. And Glenn Grothman is righteously pissed off. He spends most of his existence being righteously pissed off because he is, after all, you know, fundamentalist, evangelical, Bible-believing Christian. What's got Glenn Grothman pissed off? Glenn Grothman is pissed off because he says God is pissed off. Who's God pissed off at? God's pissed off at John Kerry, Secretary of State. Because why? Because John Kerry's not happy about the Ugandan Kill the Gay People bill that is in effect in that sad, sad country. But never mind what I've got to say. Let's go straight to Glenn Grothman, okay? Let's do that. This via rightwingwatch.org. Here we go.
You talked about the disintegration of the nuclear family. How do you see your role as a congressman to preserve marriages between a man and a woman?
Well, I think people have to be more outspoken when the issue comes up. But I think right now we have another issue where we're quite frankly losing the issue because the Republicans and conservatives and quite frankly too many church leaders are heading to the hills. But I think you have to look what's become of our country. You know, it was a week ago, 2 weeks ago now, John Kerry was in Africa. Now, usually I associate the United States with being a positive influence on Africa. Africa hasn't progressed as far as the United States.
Wait, okay. If you need to, we're going to take a break because I forgot to tell you about the duct tape and the tennis balls. You'll be wanting them. But before you go to the tennis ball, just have a big old, good old, happy belly laugh here on May Day about this notion of one tends to think about the United States having a positive effect in Africa. Is that what we're calling that these days, a positive effect? The middle passage, positive effect? Human beings chained side by side for a long transatlantic passage, lying in, oftentimes lying next to the corpse that died. Yeah. A positive effect on Africa. Of course, Africa has not. Well, let's go back. Let's let Glenn Grothman say it himself. Go, Glenn.
It was a week ago, 2 weeks ago, and now John Kerry was in Africa. Now, usually I associate the United States with being a positive influence on Africa. Africa hasn't progressed as far as the United States. You associate the United States with sending missionaries to Africa, volunteers to Africa to teach people better ways to deal with agriculture, what have you. Instead, what we have is we have the Secretary of State going to Africa and educating Ugandans, or saying he's going to send American scientists to Uganda to explain how normal homosexuality is. I mean, think about that.
Yes, let's do think about that. Sending Americans to Africa, to Uganda, to explain to the Ugandans that homosexuality, which exists in virtually every living species on this planet, is perfectly normal in humans, too. And just think about that. because Glenn Grothman is, and he's managing to do it without a brand. I mean, what the hell? Did somebody leave him outside in those thin gray settlings sloshing around between his ears that pass for brains? Did they just freeze up? Thaw out, dribble out through his nostrils? What? I mean, did the best part of this man's brain wind up on a Kleenex one day? Think about that, Glenn Grothman.
Ugandans are saying he's going to send American scientists to Uganda to explain how normal homosexuality is. I mean, think about that. I mean, what must God think of our country? You know, we had such a great country in the relatively recent past. Now,
okay. Words mean things. We had such a great country in the relatively recent past. What does that mean? What does the relatively recent past mean, Glenn Grothman? Is it before the signing of the Voting Rights and Civil Rights Act? Is that when it was? Is it the relatively recent past? Passed before the Supreme Court decided Brown versus Board of Education? Or is it the relatively recent past when John Roberts and the rats on the Supreme Court declared that the Voting Rights Act, we really don't need it anymore? Or was it the relatively recent past when your buddies, the Koch brothers, got their way and Citizens United declared that money is speech and corporations are people who do that speaking? Or is the relatively recent past pre-1860? Oh, there's a toaster, Devin. Devin, regarding Glenn Grothman, his daddy beat off in a flower pot and up sprouted a bloomin' idiot. I think we have a winner. The relatively recent past, we had such a good country, and now the homos have just ruined our country.
Scientists to Uganda to explain how normal homosexuality is. I mean, think about that. I mean, what must God think of our country? You know, we had such a great country in the relatively recent past. Now, America is supposed to be the light of the world. Instead, we're the light going the opposite direction.
We're the disco ball! We're supposed to be the light of the world. Now we're the light going the opposite direction. Hello? Physics friends in the Horn family commune, anybody? Bueller? What does light going in the opposite direction mean? Is that some sort of newfangled Kenyan Muslim usurping Islamo-fascist anti-colonial light bulb that when you flip the switch it sucks all the light out of the room? Is it just a little black hole contained in glass? Has a little event horizon around it and shit, but what?
And I guess I wish we had more political leaders and religious leaders speaking out and saying, what in the world is John Kerry doing? I mean, what must God think of our country?
What must God think of our country if our country doesn't approve of people being slaughtered and imprisoned for the rest of their natural lives because of the way that they love other people? Oh, okay. Thank you. Thank you, Randy. Randy and PA. Bob, it's like a laser pointed the wrong way. I'm still going to have to work on that. What must God think of our country? Sending people over to another country to tell them not to kill their own citizens over who they happen to love. What must... wait a minute. I thought it was... wait, for God so loved the world... love your neighbor as I have loved you. What? Homos!
If now, again, rather than sending people to Uganda to explain better agricultural techniques, sending missionaries to Africa, educating people on Christianity, we send scientists to Africa to say how wonderful the homosexual lifestyle is. It's just unbelievable what's become of our country.
One more question.
Yeah, it's unbelievable what's become of our country. Because, you know, if you send scientists to Uganda to explain that they ought not be killing their own citizens for how they love each other, You know what that means? Well, it's actually a scientific law. There's a scientific law out there that says if you do that, then you can't teach anybody about agriculture. Mm-hmm. Can't do that. Oh, by the way, while we're talking about teaching people about agriculture, maybe we might want to mention the fact that quite often our agricultural outreach involved teaching other people how to abandon their cultural lifeways that have been successful over the course of a million years, or at least 7,000, since we're talking about agriculture, and replace it with nitrate fertilizers. Because we got to move that shit, because you can't always be building bombs with it. Oh, for pity's sake. Oh, we got so many goodies tonight. The treason is continuing apace in Nevadistan. Not that we're really gonna do anything about it. And why should we? I mean, they're just exercising freedom, you know, with guns in their hands. Right? Sure. Because, yeah, America. Ay, ay, ay. Poor old John Kerry. And like Marty, when I first read that story, I thought Glenn Grothman was going to be leaning toward being all mad because John Kerry suggested that Israel was on the way to becoming an apartheid state. Because a lot of people got all pissed off about that. I think in large part because it's true. And it's not on the way to becoming, it is, has become. You know, as in pariah state. But you're not allowed to say that here in Merca because of our Judeo-Christian traditions of, oh, stop it. Devin's suggesting we send a lot of Kentucky jelly to Glenn Grothman. He's gonna need some. Answering my physics question, Michael, light in the opposite direction. I'm not certain, Michael says, but I think perhaps Mr. Grothman might be implying that John Kerry and or Big Gay have invented photon torpedoes. Okay, there's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Oh, oh my. Yeah, in any case, Michael continues, Starfleet Command will be pleased with the news. Trying not to overthink this one, signed Michael. I don't know if you can overthink anything that issues forth from the mouth of Glenn Grothman. Overthink and Glenn Grothman are really kind of mutually exclusive. But we got a bunch of this. A couple of folks lately opining on just what it is that the women's is doing to Merca. The women's. Because, you know, ever since that whole Eve talking to the snake, talking back to her, snake talking, it's all been some woman's fault, right? Sure. And why is that? That's because women are engaged in whoredom. WHOREDOM. This, of course, coming from a man who is a follower of the Prince of Peace. And, well, once they become whores, they then proceed to destroy America. By the way, going back to the Uganda story for just a moment, a note from Shorty in L.A. About Uganda sending Americans there, why the F hasn't the media said anything about our troops in Uganda? You would think, since Ebola has spread to Uganda, somebody would give a shit. Nice thorn in the sides to our military. Thanks, America. Yeah, I posted a couple of stories over at the Horn about the burgeoning Ebola outbreak, which, by the way, thanks to Republicans and conservatives and so forth, and teabaggers and birthers and deathers, and we have a new word, boogervores. Thank you very much, Bruce. They are no longer booger eaters. They are boogervores. You know, they're herbivores and carnivores and omnivores. And, well, your average right-wing teabagging voter is a boogervore. They exist in the boogosphere. There was another report that came out in the last couple of days that indicated we have entered the time of the superbug. And I'm not talking about Herbie the love bug either. The superbug that can simply not be treated by antibiotics and, well, we're on our own. Hello, evolution! This might take a while. Jesus. Superbugs. Untreatable. No, but just to get back to the man of God who has figured out what the trouble is with America. Yeah, really. We're talking, of course, about Stephen Anderson, who is the pastor of some weirdo. Well, they're not weird. They're just typical, some typical Christian denomination out in Arizona stand. We didn't get into so much prayer meeting Wednesday last night, so I guess we've got a little bit of overlap for tonight's thorn in the sides. This is a hear it to believe it moment. Here with man of God, Stephen Anderson. Duct tape. Tennis ball. Hurry. You're going to need it. Maybe. Okay, we'll try this one more time. This gets a little frustrating. Because I really want you to hear the audio of this, because just describing it doesn't do it justice. Anytime. By the way, the name of the church is the Faithful Word. The Faithful Word. Baptist Church. Like I said, just mainstream Christianity. This is not some extremism Christianity. This is mainstream Christianity. Baptist is the largest single faith in the United States. And, well, here you go. And by the way, if they don't agree with it, then they need to do something about there, but nothing's been done with this guy. Here we go.
The Bible, birth control is not right. It is a sin. It is not something that Christians should be practicing, although 99% of our nation today believes that it's acceptable. 99% of Christians and Baptists believe it's acceptable. But let me tell you something. That doesn't make it right. The Bible, crystal clear this morning, showed us what God thinks about that subject. But look, if you would, at Genesis 3:16, it says, unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. In sorrow thou shalt bring forth children.
Isn't that a loving God? In sorrow shalt thou bring forth children. I mean, that's some love, right? But we're only at the tip of the poop berg.
And thy desire shall be to thy husband, and he shall rule over thee. Now, if you look at the birth control movement, which really began in earnest in the early part of the 20th century, before that, birth control was very rarely used in this nation. It's pretty much condemned by all religions of our nation, and our culture did not accept it until the early 20th century. But at the same time was the feminist movement. And these two things go hand in hand. Because the teaching behind birth control is that it frees women of the bondage of, you know, being strapped to the house with all these children. And in reality, there is some truth to the fact that having a bunch of children does tie a woman to her husband. But that's a good thing. This is where women...
Yeah, tying women is a good thing. Ew-wee! I don't want to be anywhere near this guy when it's like Saturday night and the youngins are down and, hey, honey. Mm-mm, no. Our buddy Asa in Vancouver gets a gold star. Isn't Anderson the same douchebag who proclaimed the women's need to shut the hell up in church? That's our boy! Shut up and have babies! I remember way back when Frank Zappa had a tour called Shut Up and Play Your Guitar. Well, this is the Shut Up and Have Babies tour by Heaven Bound. Aren't you, Christians, aren't you going to love sharing heaven with this guy? Mm-mm-mm. Now, I very seldom quote Billy Joel on this program, but I'd rather laugh with the sinners than cry with the saints because sinners have so much more fun. I don't know. Then again, if you like to strap women, maybe Steven Anderson's your guy.
Women have derived their identity throughout history. This is an important part of being a woman, being a mother. But yet today...
Son of a gun, I had no idea that women could only have an identity if they had babies. Marty pointing out, the crazy is strong with this one. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. This is not the... No. Never mind. And then Ron and Raleigh. The pastor is 31 years old and has 7 children... and a very tired wife. Told you. Wonder how much strapping goes on. Jim with a question. Birth control? Willpower or apple jelly? What the F? But we ain't done. Oh, no. No, no, no. We haven't even gotten to the good part. Strap on, Steven. Oh, I shouldn't say that, should I?
Because of birth control, because we've basically given women the power, we've empowered them to decide.
Empowered, by the way, comes with scare quotes.
Decide, hey, I don't want to have children, or I want to wait a long time to have children, and so forth. This becomes a part of their life that goes on the back burner. And it creates a mentality that says, my primary role is not to get married, bear children, and guide the house, as 1 Timothy chapter 5 teaches. But rather, my main goal is my career. You know, my main goal is to go to college and to graduate from college. And I'm going to be a lawyer and I'm going to be a doctor and I'm going to be a marine biologist.
Stupid women wanting to be marine biologists against the will of Almighty God. Now, how about a little thought experiment? No, answering your note, Marty. Hey, Bob, could this be the tosser who left the note for WestJet bitching about the fact that the flight's captain was a woman? No, that's a different tosser. For lo, they are legion. You hear him talking about how women don't have any business being lawyers? or doctors or marine biologists or anything except constantly in estrus baby factories. I mean, this guy's even got the short hair, and he's got himself a scruffy-ass beard going on. If you took some of the Jesus talk out and put some robes on him and dropped him in the middle of, say, Pakistan or Afghanistan or anywhere that you've got your fundamentalist Muslims, guess what? He's going to fit right in until they get down to the Jesus part, and then somebody's going to get the head cut off. And that's not to say that the Christian is, because he may just get to them first. Repent and convert, and now you go to heaven. Thank you. No, this is the same stuff, and that's why I've said so many times, it ain't the religion itself, it's the fundamentalist version thereof that is essentially the problem. Because this... before fundamentalism took over in Iran, you had a very open society in which women did pretty much as they pleased. Before we toppled Saddam Hussein's regime, women had more rights in Iraq than they did in any other country in the Middle East. So did Christians, but never mind. So that's just a passing little observation. Let us continue with, as Marty refers to him, this tosser. Remember, this guy's not out of the mainstream. This guy's talking about the America that the vast majority of so-called Christians in this country want.
That's my main thing. And, you know, when I'm ready, I guess I'll also have a husband, too, while I'm at it. You know, my main thing is to be a politician.
I heard a baby cry in that service. Shut that baby up.
You know, my main thing is to run a business. My main thing is my career. But I guess I'll add a husband into the mix. And I guess if I want, I'll schedule a few children. Maybe one, two. Look. This is not the way that the Bible looks at this. And this is not the way that we should look at this. But it's the way the world looks at it now. Because of birth control.
Because we have found out through the use of that sciency, demonic, evil, wicked thinking stuff that the surest path toward planetary happiness is for women to be empowered and to have control over how many children they bear. It's incontrovertible. A world in which some sort of weird, sick patriarchy reigns and women are reduced to just walking uteri, constantly plopping out children every, you know, year or so, is a world that is miserable. And while we're at it, let's talk for a moment about the pre-agrarian world. Well, we have direct evidence from non-agrarian hunting and gathering people that population it was strictly controlled. We know this from indigenous peoples of this hemisphere and of the other hemisphere. And that is part of how they were so successful for so many tens of thousands of years. Women participated in their own reproductive choices, largely by keeping the men out of it. Some might even argue that is the origin of the patriarchy, taking women's control of their own bodies away from them. What do you want to bet? What do you want to bet that tucked under the mattress of Steven Anderson is a dog-eared copy of The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood with some of the pages stuck together? What do you want to bet? like the part where she has to have the baby. And they send her off to be a baby maker in the name of God and Jesus.
Because it used to be, you know, a young woman, she gets married, she has children, and that's her job. I mean, that's how she's going to live her life. That's the way God designed it. You say, oh, that's terrible. But actually, it's joyful.
Says the guy with no uterus who's never been through labor pains.
Actually, being a mother, being a housewife, being, you know, that's a very good job to have.
Says a guy who's never watched a hungry baby nurse at a breast that is unable to produce milk or has developed mastitis or. This is like a Roman Catholic priest offering child-rearing advice.
It's an honorable way to live your life, too. Don't let the world...
Nobody said it's dishonorable to be a mommy. It just isn't and cannot be the only available choice. Know what I mean? See how they set up the false dualities, the false dichotomies? See how they just march people into great vast pits of unalloyed BS?
Tell you, oh, you're just a housewife? Oh, you're just a mother? Oh, you're unemployed? I mean, they literally count my wife as unemployed. She's not unemployed.
Oh, really? She's not unemployed? How much do you pay her? How much do you withhold for payment into her Social Security? You freak. I mean, does she get a check every 2 weeks? No, you, through your own personal grace, deign to feed her and your brood of seven.
She doesn't want to be employed. I mean, she's a mother. She's a wife. She doesn't need to go out and get some other job. But
because I guess he's bringing home enough by, oh dear.
That's the way our society has become. That's the way women have become. You know, we already talked about this morning. I'm not going to talk about it again.
Oh, good.
But we talked about some of the physical health effects of, for example, the birth control pills, just all the damage that they do to a woman's body. I'm not going to rehash that. But, brother, I forgot to mention this. Brother Joe Rodriguez.
Oh, in other words, he's not going to lie about it twice. Lying about it once is enough.
Yes. Okay, he mentioned to me he worked at a plasma donation center. You know where you go and they do all that? He said that normally the plasma is like orange or yellow, the plasma in the blood. But he said that...
I think it's generally described as straw-colored, but do please continue.
When women are on birth control, their plasma is green. Yeah, I mean, they come in and their plasma is like glowing green. He's like, what in the world? And
what, Edith? All you birth control taking women with your green blood. God damn, that's how the Vulcans took over! You green blooded monstrosity! Really?
It turns out they're on birth control. And women who take birth control pills, their plasma is green. Now that shows you, remember, the life of the flesh is in the blood. You know, when your blood's turning green, that, you know.
What the does that mean? The life of the flesh is in the blood. I thought the life of the flesh was in the genome. Oh, wait. He's probably quoting from a book that was written it started out as an oral tradition among barbarians who didn't understand why it effing rains!
That just shows you the systemic effects that birth control is having on your body. And people will say, oh, it's green, but it's harmless. Don't worry about it. Right, okay.
No. The only thing that's green and harmless, is classified as a Schedule I narcotic under the U.S. code. Never mind.
Sure. But do you trust them? I don't know. But
do I trust you? I do know. No. Not in a million years.
Not only, go to 1 Timothy chapter 5, if you would, 1 Timothy chapter 5. Not only are there physical health effects of these birth control pills, They cause all the things that we talked about this morning. I'm not going to rehash all
that. Green blood.
But not only that, they have effect on their character as well.
Really? Birth control is like acid or something? No, that's just behavior. No, birth control affects character. Because everybody knows that the Human Genome Project found that character gene. Yeah. Still too cool here to get into gin. No tequila. Oh, brother. Oh, okay. John CDN in the chat room noting, green equals go, red equals stop, plasma. Just like tractors. Then Lottie pointing out, rather, well, as only Lottie can, birth control leads to wanted children. Okay, I'm gonna use the actual word that Fritz just tweeted. Bob, this Steven Anderson guy is a fucking loon. I don't use that phrase lightly. No, this is somebody that needs to be chased down with a very large net and maybe a gross of Thorazine darts. Don't give me this Thorazine. My blood will turn chartreuse.
Nighty-night.
Come back here, you rabbit. Sure. Character. Remember, we're a character.
Okay, we already talked about the fact that it causes them to look at childbearing as a side issue to more important things like the career and everything else that they're doing. When in reality, Eve derived her very name from the fact that she was a mother. That was her primary identifying feature, is that she was the mother of all living. But look, if you would, at 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 13, it says, "And withal, they learn to be idle." What does idle mean?
Now, this is 1 Timothy chapter 13, and it's not the 1 Timothy that was written after the discovery of birth control. It was written 2,000 years ago by people. I mean, it's written in a level of Greek that was not even respectable. This is not home. This is the gutter Greek of Christianity, Koine, not classical. This is Greek for dummies. So, Timothy is apparently as translated through the mind of a guy who thinks that women are nothing more than reproductive factories who are put on earth to chase around his ugly little spawn. He thinks that somehow or another people who were barely semi-literate in one language that they're fit to give advice to the modern world. Wow, what a loser.
Means you're not doing anything. You're sitting around like a car's idling when it's not going anywhere. He says, with all they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. I will, therefore, that the younger women marry, bear children, guide the house, give none occasion to the adversary to speak reproachfully, for some are already turned aside after Satan. We see here that women who are not busy about being married, busy about having children, and busy about guiding the house, they will get into sin, the Bible says.
Because they were not allowed in that culture to be doctors or lawyers or have the vote. Women in that world were essentially slaves. No, they weren't essentially. They were deemed property. And even in the most enlightened of Roman households, which this is the Roman Empire we're talking about here, a woman could be killed by her husband, acting as paterfamilias. I'm a paterfamilias. Yeah. A father in a family could kill his own children, kill his wife, not be touched. His rule was absolute. And that was Rome, that was Greece, and God knows that was the Levant.
They become idle, they become lazy, they become tattlers, they become gossips.
Right, because they don't have any role in society except being baby machines. A And even what we have remaining to us of the ancient world tells us that this drove women, women who were literate and women who were educated, this drove them nuts. Livia, for instance, who married the young Octavian, who would later become Caesar Augustus, was arguably brilliant. But she has come down through history to us as a poisoner, as a schemer. When there's nothing more but that idle gossip, written oddly enough by men, to lead us to that conclusion. Because men are essentially afraid of an empowered woman. I think there's something in there that goes all the way back. You know, maybe it's one of those Jungian things where men understand that apart from being sperm donors, we become real useless real fast. Women can be as smart or smarter. Women can be more creative. Women can be earners. Women can be creators of things other than babies. And this terrifies people like Steven Anderson. Robert in Australia pointing out, light of America, light of the world? Well, our Prime Minister Tony Abbott and his audit commission seems to think so. In his first federal budget is due on May 20th. Apparently, Australia is completely screwed financially because of the previous Labor government. Something you hear every time we change a government. The current federal government had an audit commission look at the books. I assume that was a bunch of economists. These are their recommendations: raise the age pension age to 70 by 2053. Include the family home in a new means test from 2027. Raise age to 62 by 2027. Slow the rollout of national disability insurance. $15 copay to visit the doctor and access Medicare services. Increase copays for taxpayer-funded medicines. Open pharmacy sector to competition, such as supermarkets. Allow the states to impose a personal income tax surcharge offset by reduction in federal rates. Scrap family tax benefit Part B and new means test for Part A with maximum rate cutout at $48,837 Australian. University students to pay more for their degrees and lower local repayment threshold to the minimum wage. Force young job seekers to relocate or lose welfare benefit. Privatize Australia Post, NBN Company, Defence Housing, Snowy Hydro, amongst other government-owned enterprises. And abolish the Australia Network. Medicare, as we know, has been proposed by the government's audit commission. Meanwhile, just one of our banks announced a half-year profit of $3.5 billion and no mention of taxing the sources of wealth like the stock market with a financial transaction tax. Just make the proles work longer for less and those with less pay more. I wonder where all these ideas... And that's a case of America sneezing and Australia getting Ebola. Do you realize that most people, the majority of people in the world when surveyed, say that the United States is the single greatest threat to the continuation of the species, to world peace, to world health, to world famine? Aren't we awesome? If tomorrow... No, I'm not going to do that to you. Yeah, I know. We're getting a little buffering here. Just restart. You guys know how to deal with this by now, right? John CDN. If I wrote the gospel, it would have a verse about not putting snow in my side yard. All right. Let's go back to Pastor Stephen, because we're getting into the real good stuff.
And let me tell you something. A woman who is having children is not idle. I mean, it's pretty much impossible to be idle when you have a lot of children because you're going to be busy. But we live in a society of idle women because of the fact that they don't have children. Now, look, again, if God hasn't blessed you with children yet, or if God has only blessed you with one child, that's a whole different scenario. That's God's choice. That's God saying, okay, I'm going to put you in this position. And so God can get you through that, and God can allow you to live a good, godly Christian life.
Except for the women that God kills in childbirth. Or except for the children that have been born that God then kills. Or except for the babies that God kills in the womb. Because God is a good and loving God.
And find other things to do and so forth. But when women are just setting out to go against God's will and to hinder having children.
Wait a minute. Then why do these guys, why not just get them breeding as soon as they have their first menstrual period? I mean, why wait around for this traditional marriage bullshit? Why not just lower the marriage age to 12 and get them going? I'll bet you, Stephen, how about your daughters, Stephen? Can somebody start banging away on them as soon as she's about 12 or so? I mean, she don't need no schooling because she's going to be plenty busy chasing them babies, ain't she?
It's all together. They step outside of the will of God. They become idle. They become tattlers. They become busybodies because they just don't have the work that women have that are having children that they're supposed to be having. But not only does it affect the mother, it affects our whole society. Go to Leviticus chapter 19.
Oh boy, Leviticus is always a real hoot.
Leviticus chapter number 19. Not only does birth control do damage to women,
and which it is not even referenced in Leviticus because those folks were not the sharpest knives in the drawer. Scientifically, no one was. Yeah, I mean, if you think that some invisible deity controls whether or not it rains, well, you know. So, by all means, let's get some science from Leviticus.
It hurts their body if they're using the pills, and it also...
Green blood.
So, affects their character, causing them to be an idol, tattler, gossip, turning aside after Satan. This is from, you know, I don't know, I guess the 60s or something. It's Annette Funicello. Who knows who Annette Funicello is?
Yeah, she's dead. So naturally, this man of God is going to slime her.
Yes. Okay. Nobody? Two people? Annette Funicello. Anybody know who that is? Three? Now, wasn't she like on the Mickey Mouseketeers? She was like a child star on the Mickey Mouseketeers. And then later, she was an actress and this and that. Well, here's an ad with Annette Funicello. She's in a bathing suit surrounded by four men. Four different men. These blonde-haired, like, beach guys. And they're all surrounding her. She's kind of got her hand on one, and she's kind of talking to another one. And it says, "That's right, boys. I'm on the pill." Now think about that. Not, "That's right, my husband." "That's right, boys. That's right, boys. I'm on the pill."
And you can't do a damn thing about it, you patriarchal males. But no, he's too dim to understand something like that.
M-I-C-K-E-Y, M-O-U-S-E, I'm a whore, I'm on the pill, come fornicate with me. Okay.
No, he really did that. Annette Funicello died a horrible, agonizing, painful death to multiple sclerosis. And he just called her a whore. Isn't Christianity wonderful? I mean, it really is the piece of cod that passeth all understanding. Thank you, Captain Mary. Isn't it grand? Isn't the grace of Christ Jesus just amazing? It enables a man who professes to be able to tell people how to have an eternal afterlife to stand in a pulpit and tell and talk about a woman who died a horrible, horrible death and call her a whore. See, this is one of those moments when I know it's all a fraud, it's all a fake, it's all bullshit.
because if Jesus, the righteous, really was at the right hand of God, the lightning bolt would have come down out of the sky the minute he called Annette Funicello a whore and would have split him asunder, would have gutted him like a hog and barbecued his ass right there on top of the altar like some sort of burnt offering that is yummy in the nostrils of the Almighty. Magnificent, aren't they? I mean, they're stunning in their self-appointed righteousness. And this isn't all just a goon on Christianity. This is a warning about where our country really is going. It's not going to hell because women are on the pill. It's going to hell because of people like this that want a theocracy in this country where you can be killed for, I don't know, taking a birth control pill or for not believing the way this freak does, because they're about sick of the Constitution, and they're even sicker of you and me.
This is from, you know, I don't know, I guess the 60s or something. It's Annie Mouseketeers, and then later she was an actress and this and that. Well, here's an ad with a... That's right, boys. I'm on the pill. Now think about that. Not that's right, my husband. That's right, boys. That's right, boys. I'm on the pill.
You know what's interesting? He never holds it up and shows it to the faithful. Anybody want to do some quick research and find out if this was real? Or if perhaps it was a parody. Maybe it came from the Harvard Lampoon. Something like that. Anybody? Should be easy enough to find. This guy found it.
MICKEY MOUSE. I'm a whore. I'm on the pill. Come fornicate with me. Okay, look. This is what...
Listen to the uneasy laughter.
Birth control does to our society.
Oh, wait, he shows the picture.
So not only does it affect women, not only does it affect the mother, it corrupts her view of childbearing, it corrupts her character, it corrupts her blood plasma.
It's green.
It corrupts her health. This is what it does to our society. It promotes promiscuity. It promotes whoredom. Because it teaches this mentality of, hey, I'm on the pill, boys. I mean, what kind of an ungodly, wicked advertisement is that? What kind of a woman would want to be associated with that type of advertising to just say, hey, guy, hey, all four of you, I'm on the pill. Don't worry about it. I'm on the pill.
Because in his mind, that means that she's immediately going to have sex with all four of them, because this upstanding follower of the Prince of Peace can only think in terms of sex. Sex, sex, sex. Is it too big? Is it too small? Will the girls like it? Mom, do I have a big nose? Exactly. We ain't done. We ain't done. Ron and Raleigh doing a little independent research. I just looked this asshole up in the dictionary, and lo and behold, the pastor's picture accompanied the definition. 31 years old. And is the repository of all knowledge. Robert in Australia, God, what an arse. So according to this guy, women are basically playthings for God, and their only purpose is to have more male children? You got to have some females out there so they can get... Because there is no way that a big, bold man like this guy would ever tolerate something like labor. Remember the old saying, if men had to have the babies, abortion would be a sacrament. Note coming in from Steve in China. Quick, find this freak stash of green mold wheat and we'll be tripping our brains out till the trumpets sound. And then this. Mouseketeers! You guys, thanks, Steve. tripping our brains out till the trumpet sounds. Fritz in Arkansas, not much liking Stephen Anderson. Words cannot describe my contempt for Stephen Anderson, IFB preacher. He wants religious law in America. Hashtag Handmaid's Tale. I'm telling you, the pages are dog-eared and stuck together. But he's not the only one. Yes, women, if you have women, members of the female members of the Horn family commune, Stephen Anderson says that if you've ever so much as used birth control whatsoever, that you are a person who sells her body for sex for money. Okay, maybe. And of course, because there's always a. Thank you, Dr. John. Oh man, Dr. John says, this is some good stuff. Because the Onion always has a little something out there that just works perfectly. Headline, woman a leading authority on what shouldn't be in poor people's grocery carts. With her remarkable ability to determine exactly how others should be allocating their limited resources for food, local woman Carol Gaither is considered to be one of the foremost authorities on what poor people should and should not have in their grocery carts. Sources said Thursday. This is from today's Onion. As verified by multiple eyewitnesses' reports from supermarkets across the Northampton area, the real estate agent and mother of three is capable of scanning the contents of any low-income person's basket and rapidly identifying those items which people like that don't need to be buying based on the product's nutrition and cost. Additionally, Gaither, 48, is widely regarded as a leading expert in determining which groceries they would purchase instead if they had any common sense or restraint. There's no reason she should be looking up on those pricey TV, loading up on those pricey TV dinners if she's getting the government to pay for it, Gaither told reporters at a local Super Stop and Shop, training her prodigious faculties on a welfare recipient using a benefit card in front of her in the checkout line. If I were on food stamps, I'd just buy two whole chickens and a bag of potatoes. You could feed a family for a week on that and still have money left over. All that junk she's buying is just loaded with sugar, too, said Gaither, identifying with uncanny speed another critical flaw in her fellow shopper's grocery selection. No wonder her kids are acting out like that. Oh, God. All too true. Entirely too true. And I guess, in a way, this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, right-wingers hate the women folk edition. Robert has done some research. That's right, boys. Ask your doctor. I hope Disney sues, Robert says. Notice the bottom half of the ad. That's right, boys. I'm on the pill, says Annette Funicello, starring in Beach Blanket Bingo and also How to Stuff a Wild Bikini. Ask your doctor about Yasmin on your next visit. Bayer Healthcare. 77 Belfield Road, Toronto, Ontario, M9W1G6. So, yeah, the guy turns out to be a liar. Wow. I wish I had the psychological training or maybe even the sociological training to really and thoroughly understand why it is that these right-wingers have to always hate someone, and that most often it is the weakest among us and the people who have traditionally been most oppressed that they have to hate. Is it because they feel, is it because they sense their ability to oppress going away? Is it because it is some sort of recognizable threat to their power structure? Is it because they recognize their own irrelevance? I mean, can you imagine if Pastor Stephen Anderson actually had to go out somewhere and work for a living instead of standing around in a pulpit calling dead women whores? Wow. But back to David Barton, who is, of course, a noted Christian historian. He also understands that the women folk are a big old problem. And he understands it, you know, and this is a more nuanced position than Stephen Anderson. It's not just that all women who use birth control are whores. I guess David Barton's okay with them using birth control. I don't know. But no, it's not the whoring that hurts society and the birth control. And no, David Barton has a more nuanced take.
The family was the first and the fundamental unit of all government. Well, actually, you have individual self-government first, then you have family government second, you have civil government third, you have church government fourth. Those are the four levels of government in the order they are given in the Bible.
Wait. Church government is... Oh, dear. They really are theocrats. I got somewhere a story from some right-winger who, after the botched horizontal crucifixion in Oklahoma, wants to return to stoning and shooting for Jesus.
So family government precedes civil government. And you watch that as colonists came to America, they voted by families. You look at the Pilgrims. When they finally moved away from socialism and moved toward that free enterprise system.
Socialist Pilgrims!
They called the families together and gave families plots of land, private property given to the families. And so that's the way things worked. And you have to remember back then, husband and wife, I mean, the two were considered one. That is the biblical precept. That's the way they looked at them in the civil community.
Okay, you got that? They are one. They are one flesh under the Bible. One flesh, one vote, right?
That is a family that is voting. And so the head of the family was traditionally considered to be the husband, and even biblically still continues to be so. Now, as we've moved more away from the family unit, you need to be independent from family, and don't be chained down and be a mother, and don't be chained down and be a father, and don't be chained down to your parents. And, you know, we've moved into more of a family anarchy kind of thing, the modern family kind of portrayal. That understanding has gone away. But, I mean, clearly, what Britton has asked is a brilliant question, because it does reveal that the bigotry we're told that they held back then, they didn't hold. And what they did was they put the family unit higher than the government unit, and they tried to work hard to keep the family together. And as we can show in 200 or 300 studies since then, the more you weaken the family, the more it hurts the entire culture and society. So they had a strong culture, strong society, and it was based on a strong family that preceded government, and they crafted their policies to protect a strong family.
Yeah. That whole women voting thing is not working out for America, because there's 200 or 300 studies that says that women voting is killing America. My gracious. And it goes on and on and on. And it has real-world consequences. Consider this story coming all too predictably from Texas. Before we go there, though, a note coming in from Luda. The tune-in connection is so bad this week, it keeps resetting back to the intro music or goes to classical music, so I got to reload the website. It happened 7 times just today. Just thought I'd let you know. Doing a good job. Loving the show. Oh, no. Did you hear that Anderson jackass on Tom Hartman's show today? He is even crazier live. Wow. The precious, precious, precious time. Little enough of it that there is. Oh, Stephen Anderson got some for free. Son of a... Yeah. All I can suggest is that maybe, as much as I enjoy the tune-in apps or whatever, if you have the ability to go to directly to the stream, then just do that. We've buffered up, and I have no idea why. Going to try again and work on it tomorrow. I'm paranoid. I personally think we're under attack. someone trying to keep this program from going forward. I have never stopped. We're buffering a little bit, but it never stops sending altogether. A reminder here as we come up on the end of the second hour of the program. Shirley's Wisconsin challenge is on the table and has been absolutely unresponded to. It's not every day you get a chance double your contribution, but when you do, it's good to take advantage of it. Thank you, one and all, who have and who are getting us started. On May's fundraising, remember, the first $150 that come in, Shirley in Wisconsin is willing to double. Thank you, Shirley. Thank you, everyone. Oh, okay. Marty pointing out Hartman wasn't there today. Someone named Leslie Marshall was guest hosting. Yeah, I've met Leslie. Yeah, she's a good person. It one thing to critique these freaks with their own words. It's another one just to give them time. When we understand that for every hour of progressive broadcasting, there are 1,000 hours of right-wing hate. That's why right-wingers aren't allowed on this program, ever, at all. That's why we don't have right-wing guests. I'm being a little presumptuous here, but I presume that you don't need to know that the right-wing are nuts. You need real-world information about things that are problems, things that are potential dangers. That's why we talk about the danger of theocracy. That's why we talk about the danger of bomb trains. Yeah, I noticed a remark by our buddy the Angry Indian pointing out that when the bomb train went off yesterday in Lynchburg, Virginia, it sounded. One guy said it sounded like a giant deep fryer when the burning oil struck the James River. I wonder what that did to the aquatic life. Oh, well. They died patriotically, didn't they? For America's energy freedom. No, what I was saying earlier, all this, you know, women are evil for voting, women are evil for taking birth control, it has real-world consequences, and yes, this story is out of Texas. It has to do with Dallas County District Judge Howard. She was sentencing an individual, a man by the name of Sir Young, after his admission that he had in fact raped a 14-year-old girl back in 2011 at Booker T. Washington High School for the Performing and Visual Arts. He was 18, she was 14. He was facing 20 years at hard time. But Dallas County District Judge Janine Howard exercised mercy and instead sentenced him to only 45 days in jail. And then, you're going to love this, imposed 250 hours of community service upon Sir Young at a rape crisis center. Yes, yes, yes. A district judge in Texas sentenced a rapist to go and work with rape victims. Yeah, baby, that's too bad you got raped. Yeah, I mean, you want to go out for... Maybe we'll go out and get a beer? Yeah, I'm all over that rapey thing. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm really into you. Dallas Area Rape Crisis Center Executive Director Bobby Villarreal said to WFAA, "I'm sure she probably thought that it was his way of giving back, perhaps, but it's just not an appropriate place for him to do his community supervision." I agree. Wouldn't that be kind of like imposing community service on a child molester by sending them in to be a teacher's aide in a first grade classroom? Bobby Villarreal continued, "There's just so many problems with that. First of all, we would worry about our client's safety and well-being, the appropriateness of them having any kind of contact with survivors. Even if it was a past victimization, just having a criminal defendant in the office could be a triggering effect for many of our clients." So bless her heart, Ms. Villarreal, when the probation officer said, "Judge says Sir Young's got to work down there with y'all," Ms. Villarreal said, "Mm-mm, no, ain't going to happen." Because, among other things, the Rape Crisis Center, she noted, she said, "We had a very nice conversation with them, but we told them, first of all, we have a strict policy on our volunteers. They can have no criminal backgrounds whatsoever." So I guess Judge Jeanine Howard didn't, like, call Ms. Villarreal in on a contempt citation. But, by the same token, well, she's looking for somewhere else for this young man, this young rapist, this young convicted rapist. Looking for somewhere else for him to do community service. Hint to the judge. See if you can find a community service that doesn't involve trying to get over criminal conduct. Other people trying to get over criminal conduct. See if you can find a community service that doesn't involve this guy interacting with victims. Yes, 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 Marty. She was a female judge in Texas who said, but don't be surprised by that. This is pernicious stuff. And it all sort of ties together. It's a product of the swill that pours forth into the culture day after day after day after day from the right wing, who want a government based on principles of godliness. Thank you very much to Thomas. Thank you, Thomas, indeed, for getting us started on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. There are only $120 to go now. There's $120 worth of money doubling left. Thomas just doubled his contribution to $60. So there's $120 to go, and thanks to those of you who keep all of this going. Let's take a break. I've just been filibustering along for about 2 hours now. We'll take a break. The Green News Report is on the way. And we'll after that, we'll open the phone. Well, the phone lines are already open. We will go to the phone lines. And your calls, 304-658-3333. Also, via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. Since we've heard from the followers of the Prince of Peace on birth control, how about some sanity now?
Birth control pills. That's part of the drug scene, isn't it? You'd have to count them. The entire female population of the U.S. is being used as the guinea pigs to find out if birth control pills are going to have any side effects or not. Isn't that nice? Really, if every lady who used them gets to 61 and one leg gets shorter than the other one. Yeah. Better call the pills back. Birth control pills are still on prescription. You still need a note to get laid, you know. So bad. Not only do you need a note, you got to go to one guy to get the note, and then you got to bring it to another guy. Everybody's in on it, you know. Ladies must feel silly going in there, here's my note. Oh, that's what you're doing at home, eh? Well, we're keeping a record of it here in the store. Late at night, I read them. Well, someday birth control pills will come off prescription. And when they do, they'll need those cute little catchy names that the patent medicines have. They'll sell birth control pills, you know, in the corner drugstore. There'll be one-cent sales at Rexall. There'll be attractive little cartons, merchandising campaigns, a special Christmas package, and they'll be right up there with the Schraff's two-cent mints at the cash register, you know. Take your change in birth control. And they'll need those cute little names, names which describe what the product does. Names like, well, we have so many patent medicines today, Sleepies, No-Doze, Dentu Grip, Aurifix. Sounds a little freaky, that one. I don't know. Listen, may I have an Aurifix? Not without a note, hell no. Someday birth control pills will need names like Pregnot. Doctors prefer Embryno. Here's one for the ladies. Nary a carry. Something lofty and poetic. Nay, family way. Something earthy and crude. Mom, mom. Something for the youngsters. Junior, miss. Here's a real man's product. Inconceivable. Mommy knot, fetus fail, kitty kill, papa stomper, whatever you want. Womb broom, Humpty Dumpty, you know. They're clever guys. I wouldn't be surprised if they come up with a birth control pill that doesn't work all the time. We call it Baby Maybe. Available in the six-pack, the sex-pack, and the handy shack-pack for you weekenders. One for home, one for office, and one for the glove compartment, guys. And don't forget to save those wrappers. Remember that? You always save 60 wrappers and get some azalea seeds. Here's a phone call that'll never take place. A common phone call that will never occur again once birth control is universal. Once everyone has a way to plan, no bachelor will ever have to fear this phone call again. And they fear it. So do married men. It's a scary call if you're fertile at all. Hello.
Hello? Dave?
Yeah, this is Dave. Who is this?
This is Jane.
Jane? Jane who?
Jane.
Jane, Jane?
Jane. You met me at a party about 6 to 8 weeks ago. And you said I was a real good sport.
Oh, Christ, yeah. Jane. How are you, Jane?
Pregnant. And I'm going to jump out the window.
Say, you are a good sport, aren't you, Jane?
Come on. It's Thursday, May 1, 2014.
Mayday, mayday, mayday.
Month of May starts off with a fossil fuel bang.
It went, woof. I mean, it was massive flames.
Oil train explodes in Virginia. Coal train spills in Maryland.
We have breaking news out of Pensacola, Florida this morning.
Natural gas explodes in Florida. More natural gas explodes in Texas.
It's almost a once in a 500-year event.
The scope of this disaster remains massive.
Up to 2 feet of rain in 24 hours.
Record rains wash out Pensacola. Plus, the world's largest solar plant opens in Arizona. Explosion and spill-free.
All of those explosions and spills straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So when you're taking money from the oil and gas industry, it's because you're taking money to help America.
Yes, yes, that's exactly it. This is your Green News Report.
Look, drill, baby, drill.
The fact that it hit 97 degrees yesterday, that's the last day in April out here in Los Angeles. It's that hot again today. It's going to be for the rest of the week. But you've got so many fossil-fueled explosions and spills. Never mind me. What do you have for us today?
Well, it was definitely a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad week for fossil fuels, which were booming all over the U.S. and, unlike the solar industry, not in a good way. First, a freight train carrying crude oil derailed and exploded in downtown Lynchburg, Virginia on Wednesday afternoon.
The CSX train was carrying at least a dozen tankers loaded with crude oil when it went off the rails, causing an explosion that sent a massive fireball and a plume of black smoke into the sky.
The oil tanker cars may have dumped up to 50,000 gallons of crude oil into the nearby James River, the primary water source for the city, and it also set the river itself on fire. Luckily, no deaths or injuries, but the massive fire forced evacuation of downtown, and officials say they're taking measures to protect the city's water supply.
When the Cuyahoga River in Ohio caught fire in 1969, it led to Richard Nixon forming the EPA. Maybe with the river on fire in Virginia, we'll finally be able to get rid of fossil fuels?
Not so fast. There is growing alarm, however, over the sudden increase in oil train explosions. That's prompted Canada to order an immediate phase-out of older model oil tanker cars. But in the U.S., the National Transportation and Safety Board warned last week that the U.S. is lagging behind in requiring safer and newer tanker cars.
And then the tanker cars exploded in Virginia.
Yeah, but that's not all. Within hours of the oil train explosion in Virginia, another fossil fuel train, this time carrying coal, derailed not too far away near Baltimore, Maryland. Initial reports suggest heavy rains may have washed out the track, and that dumped the coal cargo into nearby wetlands. But wait, there's even more. Out in western Texas, on the same day as the Lynchburg oil train explosion and the coal train spill in Maryland, a gas wellhead exploded and killed 2 workers and injured 9 others.
Well, at least that's the worst of it. I guess we're done now with those sorts of explosions and tragedies, for this week at least.
Nope, we're not. In western Florida, natural gas is believed to have been the cause of an explosion at a prison in Pensacola. That killed at least 2 inmates and injured more than 150 others and partially collapsed the building.
This jail had been flooded in those major storms that we told you about, more than 2 feet of rain here in this area.
That jail had been flooded in a freak rainstorm event that dumped nearly 2 feet of rain in 24 hours on Pensacola.
The scope of this disaster remains massive. More rain fell here than Hurricane Ivan.
It was the same extreme storm system that spawned those deadly tornadoes in the southeast earlier in the week.
At least we know that 500-year storm in Pensacola has nothing to do with fossil fuel.
Funny you should mention that, because climate scientists predicted years ago that the emissions from burning fossil fuels would cause global warming that would bring more frequent and intense extreme weather events.
There you go, you and your facts again.
Finally, how about some good news?
The
world's largest solar plant is now up and running in Arizona. The Agua Caliente solar plant is now online, about the same capacity as a mid-sized natural gas plant, only this plant generates clean energy that is 100% explosion free.
Wow, when you said it was a week from hell, you weren't kidding. For much more on the Week from Hell, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Please consider a donation there to help the Green News Report stay on the air so we can keep connecting the dots that very few others in the media seem willing to do. Download the Green News Report anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes, and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, ducking for cover, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your
Mayday, Mayday, Mayday
Green News Report.
Mayday, Mayday, Mayday.
Mayday, Mayday.
Ten minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We're about to enter the conversation radio portion of the program following a two-hour filibuster. A reminder that we have $120 to go on Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge to get the month of May started here on the Horn. Did you notice that? Thanks out into the Twitter sphere to Dem Progressive for pointing out the story, which Brad and Desi then reported on, regarding the derailment of a coal train in Maryland today. CSX has just had a bad couple of days. Remember, at CSX, every day is Earth Day. Yeah. Because, you know, if a bunch of coal dumps out on the ground, there's no problem for that. I mean, it's not like steel or iron that'll rust or anything. I mean, you can just rain on it and nothing will happen. I mean, no selenium will leach into a local stream or anything. No. It's clean coal, right? Yeah, sure, you bet. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello, Edward.
Yes, I won't keep you. Are those creatures that you've been playing, are they human?
I believe that is open to debate, but that they consider themselves so. I mean, apparently Steven Anderson reproduced at least 7 times.
Jesus. Pardon my...
Well, I mean, his wife did all the work because she has to stay home. And...
Yeah. Oh, for heaven's sakes. Well, I've had to turn you off several times to keep me from... Lee made me turn you off because I was getting ready to destroy the furniture.
And you know that furniture kicking, Edward, gets real painful. I kicked a piece of furniture with my bunion the other day, and I about cried.
It does. I can't believe these people. I can't believe that they're human.
Well, it's not. But once you get past that, Edward, it gets really terrifying because these are the people who want to destroy America's constitutional form of government and impose their own sort of Christian Sharia law, you know?
Oh, yeah. They're the ones who want to burn me at the stake.
Yeah, and anybody who likes you.
Yeah. Oh, I know that. What idiots. Oh, well, I'll let the else talk. I just had to
say. You know what it says in the book, the idiots you have always with you.
Oh, we sure have got plenty of them. And I think Lee's taking a nap right now, so he won't prevent me from breaking the furniture.
Take it easy on the moss covered 3-legged family credenza, would you, Edward?
Oh Lord, take care.
All right, see you, Edward.
Bye.
Bye now. Our buddy Edward calling from Dallas. We continue onward. Lines open 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program.
You're still wondering if you'll feel that way in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I think we'll be fine, Bill.
Yeah, you got me going. You had to talk about Annette, didn't you?
Yeah, isn't that classy? Isn't that classy calling a dead woman a whore?
Oh.
I mean, that's some Christianity, isn't it?
Yeah. Real. And that's their whole thing, Bob. Everybody who disobeys shape or form is doomed to hell. Of course, you're halfway there when you have to listen to these people.
Well, but, you know, they never realize that there aren't a lot of us out here who are just wondering, man, I can't wait to spend all eternity with Steven Anderson in paradise.
Oh, yeah, that would buy me. Do you have you asking for a ticket to the nether region. You have a ticket for the nether regions. They got to get away from this guy. Jesus Christ. 13 or so when I was 14, so she did get your attention, you understand, at that age.
I understand.
There was a whole bunch of them that were, yeah. Anyway, that's another story. By the way, you just went off on me.
Oh, yeah. It's been going on all night.
Yeah, man, we got to do something about that, Bob. I don't know what to do.
Well, it's not on your end, Bill. It's not on your end.
I know.
It's something that's happening between here and the server.
Yeah, you think somebody's playing with you or what?
Personally, yes, I do. And they're not playing.
It's a shame to feel paranoid, you know, but this is what...
Well, now, remember, paranoia is the irrational fear that people are out to get you. When I've sat here and watched this happen night after night after night after night, and everything else works fine, that's not irrational.
You begin to wonder, you know, if there's... Because these guys have all the money in the world to play with, the Koch's, if they're behind with so much of this stuff, their money's unlimited. It's just, you can't do much with those two guys. You know, the whole family, the whole John Birch Society mentality, which I keep saying, we thought we could kill that once. But yeah, you got me going. Then you started talking about the stuff dropping into the water of the James. Now, that's way upriver, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's in the foothills of the Blue Ridge.
Yeah.
Here's how serious it was, that derailment yesterday, that bomb train explosion. Richmond, Virginia, had to shut down its public drinking water supply and switch over to an intake on a canal just to make sure that they didn't get any of that energy independence in people's drinking water.
There was talk that that's where Bobby Lee was heading when he got out of Petersburg. He was heading out west to that area, you know, to try to escape the clutches of Meade and Sheridan and the rest of them that were coming to get him, you know. Oh, well. But, yeah, there's so many things that keep... we talked about that explosion, man. That you talked about the fish. My first thought was, it's how sick I am. Some capitalist somewhere will come along and be able to start selling pre-cooked fish. You don't have to cook it. You can just pull it out of the river and...
Yeah, right, yeah. Flash-fried fish from the James River.
Exactly. I don't know what that... I think you go up far enough up the river, you'll find smallmouth bass, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, for the region, wouldn't be surprising at all.
I actually saw...
I saw a picture, I guess it was yesterday, a state record blue catfish was pulled out of the caught out of the Ohio River.
Ooh, holy God.
Yeah, and there was a picture of the guy...
It didn't have three or four.
It was in profile. I only saw the one. Coming out of the Ohio River, no way I'm going to eat that.
No, well, we were fishing one year. My second wife and I took off to the Sandusky Bay, and the cats come in there and do a lot of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? When the fish enjoy sex, which, of course, that makes them evil, too, doesn't it? But they, you can catch those guys down there like it's nothing, except I just don't want to eat them.
No.
Anything coming out of Lake Erie that...
No. Remember, there is virtually not a stream left in these that isn't compromised to one degree or another by the presence of mercury, which is fallout from the burning of coal in power plants in this country. The whole country. I mean, there
is... You know, when coal was it, there was a time when mankind had not discovered anything else. You know, so what do you, I mean, it's like the old story, what did you work with to heat a home? You know, because natural gas, hell, in eastern suburban Cleveland, if you went out 10 miles from downtown, you might not find the availability of natural gas. My uncle was still getting coal delivered to his house in the 60s.
Well, it's funny, here where we live, there are natural gas pipelines that go under our property. But we cannot, you know, we can't get natural gas service. We have to use coal-fired electricity or propane. Because, you know, no solar need apply.
Yeah, I used propane in my camper, and that always scared me to death in many ways. But that stuff is liable to blow me right out of this damn thing. You know, because propane is, you never know when something's going to start leaking. You know, those propane tanks that they refill for you, some of the time there's enough rust down there to scare you.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
Well, and I guess you're... If you've got, like, one for your gas, place it every 12 years?
Yeah, 12. I mean, that's a longer time than I would think about. But 12, I didn't realize they talked about 12. 12, to me, is a long time to keep something that catches a lot of rain and moisture and God only knows what, you know?
Yeah.
And how good are the guys that are building these things? Are they cheaping out on something involved? Because these guys will, you know, I've seen television sets built where the guy ran a circuit to a point where he could save a few cents per, did that enough times, you could make more money.
Right.
Because that's the whole
point. Well, that's the MBA approach to America now. If you can save a tenth of a penny on a single unit, but you're going to sell 50 million units, well, that, you know, it turns into some real money after all.
The employee that would use the old suggestion box, you know, they used to have spotted something that you put a suggestion in and they found out they could save a little money, at least they would reward the guy who came up with the idea, the guy out on the floor, you know?
Well, sure, but you know, these cost savings, let's remember, those are not passed on down to the workers. Those cost savings are bundled into a better compensation plan for the CEO, or they're bundled into the quarterly profit and earnings statement for the shareholders. The workers still get the, you know, short end of the stick.
Well, I had a buddy who was in on the cell business early, and he was making, I think, about $70,000 a year, because he had started with these people for nothing. And the business took off. The cell phone business was nothing when he started with it, you know?
Yeah.
And we're talking 25 years ago. It didn't amount to a row of beans then. My first cell phone came in a leather bag, and you had to carry it with you. And it was
I remember the bag phone, yes.
Yeah.
It was, well, you know, I was talking earlier about this being Agnes and my, being the arrival of our daughter. And I carried that behemoth with me everywhere I went because I was on the road a lot in case she went into labor and she had a lot of preterm labor issues, so I could be reached and I could turn around and get to where I needed to be.
Yeah, I sure heard enough. My first wife worked psych for many years until they found out it was not helping her. It was exposing her to something she couldn't deal with. And then she went into labor and delivery. She worked for the Salvation Army Hospital here in Cleveland doing that work. And she'd come home really upset some days when they lose a child. But a lot of times she'd come home happy because they had, you know, delivered a few good, healthy kids. And the things that go with that, you know, the feelings that go with that kind of stuff. Human feelings are a funny thing, but they can, you know, you can sometimes... You can pick up a lot of joy off of from working and doing something positive for somebody else. That was my only problem with what I did for a living. That I didn't think it was a positive thing to walk outside and see some guy. He was addressing that famous guy, Roy York.
Yeah.
Remember him? Yeah, the guy that you called on when you drank too much. I mean, it was a standard joke, but it's true. I mean, it's what you saw. And you didn't like it much. But, yeah, I'm surprised that somebody hasn't come up with, hey, yeah, these fish are pre-cooked, but we can really make some money on these.
with that lovely hydrocarbon bouquet.
Yeah.
You know, just like your hamburgers get when you don't let the charcoal starter burn off.
You know, I got to a point where I wouldn't use that charcoal starter. Give me a, if I had a charcoal grill, you gotta, they used to sell like a big, it looked like an oversized coffee can with holes in it.
Yeah.
And you put paper underneath.
Oh,
charcoal starter. Yeah, that was the way to work. And
in fact, I don't like to buy the briquettes now. You can get actual charcoal that's been made out of hardwood. I guess they take cast off pallets and stuff, and they turn it into charcoal in a kiln, and then you can use that, because charcoal briquettes are full of all kinds of nasty stuff, binders and glues and. But if you just put a chimney full of this stuff in it, get it lit with the newspaper, it turns white hot. You put it in there, put the grills on, and get them, and then boom, do your burgers.
Yeah, it was just, I think it took me about, it would take about 15 to 18 minutes, and then I had a old secondhand hair dryer sitting by.
Oh yeah, in other words, an electric billows.
Yeah, exactly. Being lazy, pumping that hand bellows, I mean, that took work, Bob, you know, and being an American, give me that labor-saving device, no matter what it is. Hell, my shoes, I have two pairs of, one pair of Florsheim sharp-pointed 1955 revisited, and a pair of lace, boots, the Florsheims, and you give me a drill with a buffing pad on it, and a can of Kiwi shoe polish, and something to squirt water on those things after you work in the Kiwi, and your shoes glisten. I mean, that's a throwback to being what we would have called, before your time, we would have called a greaser. Because that's what we were in my neighborhood. You better be anyway.
Mirror shine on the,
The old armed services water shine, stitch shine, if you want to use a crude term for it. But anyway, I'll let you go. But, I mean, the thought of these people, what they're doing is, I think I've asked you the question, if you've ever been up to the area on the old Chesapeake and Ohio Canal where they blew through a mountain.
What are you talking about, Cumberland, Maryland?
Around there. They blew right through a mountain so they could run the canal through it.
Right.
And I've seen pictures of them. I wanted to see it because when I drove through there, I don't know what road I was on. I was coming out of, I had spent a few days down at the Kitty Hawk, you know, where the, right, you could look out the back window of the place. There was four couples. So how much did it cost? You know, when you split it up, eight different people contributing to it. And, that was a rough night because there was a young woman who had never met her father, and she knew that I had just met my daughter who had been given up for adoption. And boy, she was working me like a, working my right hand like a pump handle, you know, talking, asking questions. And
yeah, how do you deal with
looking
it?
Looking for answers. Answers that I didn't have, Bob. I mean, I wish I had answers for that kind of stuff, but I, like everybody else, Bob, I'm still, at age 71, I'm still asking questions, you know.
And by the way, you tapped into a little bit of zeitgeist there, Bill. Jack just wrote in from Shreveport and says, I remember taking an extension cord and hairdryer out to the grill a few times myself.
Yeah, because that got the thing, by the time you put in about 15 or 18 minutes in that chimney, you could spread that stuff out and it was white hot and you could revent. To me, charcoal, I prefer cooking on cold. Natural gas, I'll tell you what.
Yeah, well, like the hardwood stuff that I'm talking about, you know, it imparts a flavor.
Yeah.
Of course, so does charcoal starter, as noted. Gas, much. It's just heat.
Well, the gas, what I used to do with gas is I have a rotisserie going, and you stick a piece of pork roast on that thing, and, you know, throw on the stopwatch and let it roll, and when you got to the last part of it, you take a can of cherries or peaches and pour it over that pork. And
I've never done the cherries.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be something. I've done peaches with pork. That's, yeah. But I've never done cherries. That just sounds spectacular.
Well, I guess there's too much damn German in me. And, ma'am, you talked about who just bought the biggest pork producers in the world. It has me thinking, do I want to eat this stuff anymore?
Long before they bought Smithfield, I had that feeling anyway because I had been reading up about the neighbor Carolina. That would put you off your kibble pretty quick, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, you say being a German, I mean, you give me a pork roast and a side of something that I haven't made in a while because I don't have a good chopper for it. They got thrown out when I moved. A good side of potato pancakes.
Oh, God,
maybe
I love them.
Some clout, you know, and that's what I was out with my buddy today. And
Let me ask you, speaking of kraut, have you ever had... have you ever had kraut pierogies?
No. I keep pierogies around for breakfast a lot. You know, you can buy the frozen stuff, which is not as good as during Lent on the west side of Cleveland when I was living over there. During Lent, some of the churches, the Central and East European churches, were marketing pierogies during Lent. And,
oh, I love them. I do. I'm really excited because I convinced the lovely ladies up at the Exxon gas station / restaurant to make cabbage rolls this Sunday. Because I'll crawl across ground glass for cabbage rolls.
My mother used to do the cabbage rolls, but she didn't stuff them the way the. That's one thing about this town that I live in. You talk about ethnic city, this was it. And
everybody did things a little bit different, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. My dad left me with a book called Showbiz, From Vaude to Video. And, man, did this guy cover the 20s and the 30s, the pre-radio days when the neighborhoods in a city like Cleveland, there was Little Italy, there was Little Hungry, there was a little, you fill in the blank, you know, but the neighborhood would be made up of people from...
Speaking of which, let me tell you a story. I was talking with my buddy Bo, and, you know, he spent a lot of time, well, he's been to see you play back in the day, because he ran a business up in Cleveland.
Okay.
And he was talking about some buddies of his from one of the enclaves there. And I think they were maybe Hungarian.
Yeah.
And
they drank
this stuff called Slivovitz.
That Slivovitz was not was it Hungarian or was it more Serbian?
Maybe it was Serbian, but it's like this 100 proof plum brandy. And they drink that, and he said it was like, you know, out around a campfire kind of thing, bonfire, whatever. And he said they would get these hunks of, like, pork belly bacon kind of, and they would get it sizzling hot on a skewer in the fire, and then drizzle that pork fat over and eat all that and drink Slivovitz all night long. And he said, you haven't lived until you've tried that.
Yeah, that was, this town used to be loaded. In fact, today my buddy Colin and I and his little daughter went down on what we call the hill, down in Murray Hill, Mayfield Hill, the old Little Italy, and there's a place down there that still is reasonably priced pasta dishes.
Oddly enough, you would mention that there's a funky little restaurant culture here in the tourist area that I live in, and there's a great Mexican joint. And there's a wonderful sandwich place, and there's another place that does this sort of, you know, funky sandwiches on paninis, and it's a coffee bar and stuff, and there's an amazing pizza place. There's a good Cajun and low country seafood place. You cannot get, unless you drive all the way to Beckley, which is, you know, a good 30, 40 miles, you cannot get a decent plate of pasta. I mean, we got a pizza joint here on this side of the river. No. I mean, talk about sketchy. Ooh, bad. It's a chain that exists throughout West Virginia called Geno's, and it is just god-awful. But to get it, you know, to get, you know, it just, you know, pasta al pepe, you know, it's just pasta and olive oil and pepper. Ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. This area tends to think that Italian food means Olive Garden.
Yeah, that's the thing. These chains are homogenized. It's just like everything else in this country. It's like blues. A lot of the kids that start playing blues, they can only play out of the Chicago style, the Chicago school, which is based in Mississippi school, because there's a pretty direct road up from Mississippi to Chicago, and a black person from Mississippi to anywhere was a good change of location.
Well, hell yeah. It still is in large part.
You played something by a great jazz singer, female, Mississippi Goddamn.
Oh, yeah, Nina Simone.
Yeah. Because that place was just hell on earth. I can't understand it. It's a damn poor, it's a poor state for whether you're white, black, or from Mars. It's a poor state.
Yeah, poor, well, no, poor, I think their state motto is poor and proud of it.
Oh, Jesus.
Just like the state motto of Oklahoma is, we stole this place fair and square.
Yeah, well, I remember pictures of the, still pictures of when they were ready to shoot the gun off and start them running for the free land, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was that's kind of a loose working definition of free, Bill.
Yeah, it is.
Free for the taking. Free for the stealing.
Yeah. Free for the stealing. Because that's what's so remarkable, is we didn't this country subject the Native American to that land?
Yeah.
The Indian Territory?
Mm-hmm. Well, and then, you know, there's kind of a double indignity on it, because that was where the genocidal relocation of Native Americans in the Trail of Tears, that was the end point. So what's left of a culture gets settled there, and then along comes the new United States and says, you know what, we're going to give this. Screw that treaty. Oddly enough, just to extend the metaphor, the treaty issues are alive today, because like this giant open pit mountaintop removal iron mine that this kleptocrat from West Virginia wants to build in northern Wisconsin. In order to build it, the United States government is going to have to abrogate a treaty that's been on the books since at least 1847. That allows hunting, gathering, and fishing rights throughout what are referred to as the ceded territories of northern Wisconsin. In other words, the native peoples ceded the land to the United States with the understanding that the wetlands drainage of the area goes right into the river that runs through the reservation, which will then be poisoned. It'll destroy the wild rice beds. It'll destroy the fish population. All those, you know, all those beautiful everything fish that are there. It'll find its way into Lake Superior, which is actually the cleanest of the Great Lakes that remain. And
Canadians aren't going to like that much, are they?
How much can they like or dislike? Look at what they've done to native peoples in regard to the tar sands.
Yeah, very true.
There's a perception out there that somehow Canada is more respectful of indigenous rights, but it's really hard to come to that conclusion.
Well, they've changed governments up there, for damn sure.
Well, it's kind of like what Robert in Australia was pointing out, the nasty American Tony Abbott's proposing down there. The Harper government sooner or later will go after Canada's healthcare system if they haven't already.
Yeah. Well, they're sure going to try. Yeah. You know, all this crap you hear about the Canadians and their healthcare system Bob, I used to fish this area, Rice Lake, up near Peterborough, and I'd go up there, and every year I'd have to stop at Niagara Falls because of a Hungarian restaurant, and you had to spend a couple of days in Toronto. Well, one thing that was stolen from me that I was kind of wasn't happy about having, but it was an unusual thing. I had picked it up at a store on the waterfront in Toronto, down on the harborfront, and it was a military medal from somebody who had served in Indochina, for God's sake. And that's got to be hard to find, you know, because the number of people serving in the French War was not very large compared with what we put over there, you know.
No.
And somebody grabbed that from me, but and that's the guy. Every time I'd be on a transit, because I like the transit up there, because a lot of the streetcars I was riding on had been sold by Cleveland to Toronto in 1953 when I was a 10-year-old kid, and they were still running.
Mayor of Toronto has decided he's going to take some time off from campaigning to go into alcohol rehab.
Well, he sure needs to do something.
Yeah, Rob Ford. Yeah, what a mess.
Well, at least he admits to it. It's the ones that you got to watch. The ones that are. What was the song, Behind Closed Doors? Hell, I was thinking about you today because my buddy took me into a little restaurant bar on the west side of Cleveland, and the owners. The place is loaded with country musicians when they have these sessions. And these guys are all players who have, some of them have had some professional stuff, but it's not about that. It's just about playing. And it's a tiny little place, and I hear the music is tremendous. One of these days I don't have to go over there and hear it, but, that's why I feel like such an old park, because the things that I took for granted as a young kid are being hacked away. These guys, they can't steal enough money, Bob. That's what bothers me. It makes me into a cynical person because it seems to me there's no place and nowhere that these fellas can't find a way or a reason to steal from it. We have to more. It's that next quarter mentality that's going to kill the whole thing. This idea they have to turn a bigger profit every quarter. And sometimes, you know, you can't always do it, can you?
No, and there's a larger issue there, Bill. That, like I said before, I think we're in a race against time as a species on this planet, because you know there is no other reason than avarice for exploding bomb trains in Castleton, North Dakota, and Pickens County, Alabama, and Lac-Mégantic in Quebec, and Lynchburg, Virginia. Avarice is the only thing.
They can't steal.
The Keystone XL pipeline has nothing to do with anything but avarice.
Yeah.
And anybody who believes the notion that this is going to be some sort of economic panacea, it's absolute BS. It's going to cost us more than. Well, I mean, it's kind of like the coal. Like I said before, West Virginia has been America's canary in the coal mine, and the canary's pretty damn sick. But everything that has happened here microcosmically is going to happen in a macro way to the rest of the country. For instance, we found out economically that for every dollar coal brings into this state, it costs this state $5. And that's what's going to happen with the Keystone XL pipeline. That's what happens with fracking. That's what happens with mountaintop removal. That's what's going to happen with the oil fracking in the Bakken fields of North Dakota. Because the only way they can claim that it's profitable, Bill, is if they externalize costs and don't count what they are doing to people and communities and the land and the water and the air. If you count the externalities, it's a loser. And that's why we need to find some way to impose the externalities on the goddamn shareholders.
Well, see, I didn't take that very seriously 35 years ago because you keep thinking, well, these guys want to keep making money, so they're not going to destroy their way to make money. But they have the thinking is so different today. to make a penny a pound more, you know, is, do you remember when there was nothing, with so many ads in the paper when I was a kid, newspaper ads for time study engineers, if you know what those people were, the efficiency guys, who would stand around observing people working on a factory floor and try to come up with some small way that they could screw something and make another penny a pound, you know?
Yeah, I always think in terms of the old McDonald's 8 patties to the pound rule.
Yeah. Because it seems to be these guys are willing to destroy the planet they live on for more money. It's so, don't they see what are they going to do? Maybe that's why they want to go to outer space so bad, because they figure they can get away from it and go do the same thing on another planet, you know? It just bothers me so much.
I just wish we could let them go and get started so the rest of us could start, that the people who give a damn could start fixing what's left here, you know? Hey, Bill, I got to roll, but it's been a great conversation.
Yeah,
you take care.
Easy, my friend.
All right.
Good night.
Bye now. And, of course, with our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress from Cleveland, there's always a little bit of food porn. And now, wow, hungry. That's no good at 13 minutes till 9. Big thanks going out to Sylvia. Sylvia kicked in on the Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge with a note. Thanks for supporting we females who are being put upon by such Christian persons as the pastor. What a load of dot, dot, dot. Lots of dots. Thank you to our dear friend of long-term, Cindy, in the Great Northwest. Thank you very much for your help this evening. Thank you to VJ, who just jumped right out there and took care of the whole of Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge. So that's wonderful. That's a wonderful way to begin the month of May. And of course, thanks to Sal, who is there each and every night, and if I understand correctly, has some happy news in the offing. Sal indicated that there are nuptials somewhere down the road. Congratulations, Sal. Note coming in from Granny T in Tennessee: a simple question regarding Pastor Anderson. Did Little Reverend Shit for Brains say anything about erectile dysfunction or Viagra? Does it mean cod don't like them no more if they little flags don't fly and just sort of get all droopity? Yeah, you know, I'm sure, right. No, there wasn't anything in the sermon about men not taking Viagra. Because, you know, that just means God doesn't want you to do it anymore. No, it doesn't. That's why God gave us science to invent Viagra. See how it works? Yeah. Hey, just for the fun of it, and by the way, we fired up the Horn Malloy Skype group during the worst of the buffering, and I promise you, we are working on this stuff. I just don't know what it is. I really appreciate the email I got earlier today talking about buffering, but here's the deal. When the buffering's taking place, I have run speed test after speed test after speed test on our system here, and everything's fine. You know, we're getting what we're supposed to get. And Skype never craps out, and the chat room doesn't crap out, and everything works except the stream up to the server. So we're going to continue to investigate this. But thanks for the fact that you care and you're willing to offer your advice and help. Let's just say good evening to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group this evening. Hi, gang.
Hey, Bob.
I got to go barbecue, so charge on.
Oh, yeah, rub it in.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it's 53 degrees here, rainy, and I am still wearing a coat. By the way, Bob and Agnes, happy anniversary. And remember, folks, if you want to give Bob and Agnes a gift, making sure that the horn is running is always a great gift. I just wish someone would give you, Bob, and Agnes, a gift so large, you can go electronic shopping for anything you want.
Bless your heart, Will. Thank you very much.
We
still have that plan, and I've just got to find enough time to get down and dirty and pull it all together. to get that Kickstarter campaign going, because the fondest wish I have for this whole thing is to get us off the coal-fired grid.
Exactly, because guess what? Fossil fuel industry, by any logical standard, a logical species, such as the fictional Vulcans of Star Trek, would have rejected this technology years ago by saying, why would we want to poison ourselves? We are not irrational. Unfortunately, we have, well, yesterday was church night, but for mass, the energy, the Koch brothers, and too many others, the only deity or divine being they seem to recognize in their daily lives is not a Palestinian rabbi and occasional carpenter, or a creator, but rather mammon, greed.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it seems as if they are fighting between mammon, greed, and Cthulhu, who desire to destroy the planet.
Oh, I think these are Cthulhuites through and through, Will.
But we are seeing progress on a few fronts. They just view mammon as a means to an end. But there has been progress on a few fronts there. There's a deal in the works for a $15 minimum.
Well, didn't the $15 minimum wage already go through in Seattle? Yo, guys. Huh, well, okay. I said we hadn't had any problems with Skype. Then we have problems with Skype. Beautiful how that happens. You know, the whole group went down. They'll be darned. Well, it looks like it's time for a call to tech support, too. Isn't that interesting? Are we back? Will, do I have you? No, apparently not. Oh, brother. Yeah, we'll get through this yet. Ben is one of the sharpest people I know with regard to the internet, and hopefully we'll sort through it. But it's Seattle Tacoma Airport, SeaTac, that has the $15 minimum wage. Hopefully Seattle can push it all the way through. I guess, given the technical difficulties we have experienced, we'll begin to wrap things up. Again, many thanks to everybody who made Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge a success this evening. Sal, VJ, Cindy, Sylvia, Thomas, and of course, first through the gate with the month of May, our buddy Randy. Thank you, one and all. Thank you very much to just a minute, because I want to make sure I don't miss anybody. Oh, darn it. Because we got, here. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, Sal, VJ, Cindy, Sylvia, Thomas, Robert, and Randy. Thank you, one and all, for making this evening a success. Had a note, and apparently I just sort of blew right past it. Going back to the book banning earlier this evening, had a note from Kate. And she pointed out, as a long ago library person, I can tell you that banning is very good for sales. Sherman Alexie does it again. These folks just don't get it. Good for sales and good for the kids who aren't so narrow-minded and usually get a good giggle when considering the silliness of it all. Please remember that this part of Idaho is Utah North. Yeah, I was thinking about that. They object to everything that ain't in their book. You know, the book of, well, the book of moron with one too many M's. Yeah. Thank you, Kate. Thank you indeed. All right. Thank you also, one and all, to everybody, again, who contributes your time, your energies, your ideas, via calls, emails, Skype, Twitter, Facebook, and sometimes just by sitting and listening and being there. Thank you. Because it's all a representation of community building and sharing of the most finite, precious resource any of us has, and that is our time on this little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky for his ongoing maintenance of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. And remember, when we have these buffering issues, we'll try to put up the bat signal and fire up the Skype group because we got about 20 slots that people can get in there. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Busy in Australia with hopefully some news to share in the not-too-distant future, maybe about the middle of this month. Thank you to Ben Birch for all the work he has done and continues to do. You know, the White Rose Society has been around for more than 10 years now and has basically single-handedly saved progressive radio on the Internet because there's not much space for it in the terrestrial sphere. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org, acheact.org. Go there. Be a part of the grassroots activism that represents the best chance any of us have to end the nightmare that is mountaintop removal in Appalachia and, by extension, provide this country with the desperately needed victory that everyone interested in protecting their communities not only wants but needs, and which we must all have if this is to continue to be a habitable continent and, in fact, a habitable world. It's not just about mountaintop removal. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Smith is next on the Horn.